Welcome to The Aging Scientist, focusing on all things science and aging. I'm Clarissa Giebel, and I'm a researcher at the University of Liverpool, exploring inequalities in dementia care and aging. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Caroline Green from King's College London and Professor Debbie Gerritsen from Radboud University in the Netherlands. For those of you listening their way through these podcasts, you will notice a common theme of Dutch experts invited on this season on care homes. To start off this brand new season, we'll be talking about human rights and well-being in care homes. So as for our panelists today, Dr. Caroline Green is gerontologist and social care researcher based at the NIHR ARC South London at King's College London. Her research passion lies in the field of human rights of older people, and particularly the practical implementation of human rights in long-term care settings using qualitative methods. Professor Debbie Gerritsen is a geropsychologist and has a chair in well-being of frail elderly people and people with chronic illnesses in long-term care. Her research is about identifying problems in and opportunities for quality of life and quality of care for nursing home residents, developing interventions to address these and evaluate the effects of these interventions and their implementation. So welcome both. It's great to have you on the show. And also for all the listeners, we're all non-English natives from Germany and Netherlands, so let's have an English chat about these findings now and these discussions. So Caroline, let's start off with you. Your research looks at human rights more broadly and specifically in care homes. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so hi, and thanks so much for inviting me. I'm just really briefly about my background. I am a lawyer, and then I did a master's degree in human rights. And I approach human rights not very much from a legalistic perspective, but more from a sociological one. So I really try to understand how people feel about the topic of human rights, what even the concept, how that makes them feel, what they think about it, what they know about it. And so specifically within the context of care homes, I try and find out what the concept of human rights does to people, how different people approach the topic, and then how we can actually implement human rights in care settings. So those are sort of the broad themes I'm interested in.
That's really interesting that you come from a non-psychology background.
Yes. So I think that, you know, human rights research is thought of very much still as a sort of like legalistic topic. But I think we need to look at it from a different perspective, from a sociological one, from a psychological one, and specifically when it comes to care homes or, you know, care settings. I think we really need that different perspective and interdisciplinary research to understand better what human rights mean in care homes to people living and working in them and visiting them.
So what's your work shown so far looking at human rights in care homes?
So I started working in that topic, well, really within my PhD research. And just a little story to introduce that. I remember around, I don't know, like 10 years back or so, I was part of a roundtable discussion in Germany, and it was also about human rights in care homes and human rights training of staff. And we were talking, around five of us, we were talking to each other, and 2 hours and not much of an outcome. And we were wondering why are we turning in circles? Why are we not getting anywhere with this meeting? And we realized that we are all approaching the topic in different ways. So we all think and define human rights differently. And we think of it in terms of, you know, what it matters, how it matters in care homes in different ways. So different approaches. So I took that, I found that really interesting, that insight. So I took that into my PhD research, and I went into care homes and I asked people working, living and visiting care homes what human rights mean to them, how they approach the topic. And then I also wanted to find out what the right to privacy means to them in the practical terms within care home settings. So going back to the first, you know, how do people approach human rights? I found that there are lots of different ways how people think of human rights in care homes. So for some of them, it's all about law. It's about human rights violations and going to court when something has gone wrong. And for others, it's about, you know, what kind of care do we provide and how can we make sure that we provide care that is human rights based? So that I found really interesting. And for me, it means that when we talk about human rights in care homes, we need to first establish a common understanding of what we're actually talking about here. Yes, and the right to privacy was also interesting just to see, you know, how different people define that for themselves, also care home residents, and how it is a very individualistic way of saying what is the right to privacy to me, what it does it mean to me.
It's fascinating to hear that everyone had different perspectives about what does human rights actually mean. And picking up on the privacy issue in particular, so one of my DClin students, she's just finishing and giving a talk later today as well on care home staff experiences of sexuality, intimacy, and relationships of care home residents. And so she spoke to staff and she identified a lot of like unmet needs and different perceptions about, is this okay? Is this not okay? How do we deal with this situation in a care home setting? Did the relationship angle or the need for this type of privacy come up in your research as well?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think first, what I think I also want to say is that was a common thing, a common theme across all approaches to human rights and also to the right to privacy, was that it's a very emotional topic. And it's one that's linked very much to shame and blame and, you know, very deep human emotions. And going back to privacy, what I found is when you really talk about the right to privacy is, you know, there's this concept of privacy and what it means to different people. And there are different spheres within care home life, just like home life as well, where privacy is important to us. And that may be human relationships, it may be around our body, around our property. And then it's about the relationships we have with staff, so as residents, with the staff, with the visitors who come into the home, and how these different spheres of privacy are protected, what kind of choice there is and what kind of respect there is. So in the end, to me, what human rights in care homes really are, it's all about high quality relationships and how people treat each other.
Mm-hmm. Really well said. Debbie, do you want to add anything from your Dutch perspective?
Yeah, I was thinking, it's not from my group, but another university also did study on sexuality and intimacy in nursing homes. And found that it's for staff often very difficult to talk about. We have a plan in nursing homes that almost all nursing homes used about care, and they have to fill things in, the wishes and needs of residents. And there's also a section on sexuality or intimacy, I think it's called, but it's often not filled in because people don't dare to talk about it with residents and with their informal caregivers. So it's a very important issue that needs more attention, I think, in Dutch nursing homes as well.
Do you know whether staff in Dutch nursing homes receives support or training specifically for that, or is it just generally that it's not filled out in this section?
I think there are initiatives on helping them. So, for instance, I know of a care institution who has called a sex suitcase, in which she takes a suitcase with all stuff about intimacy and sexuality into care teams and talk to them about these issues. And this also includes, for instance, example questions on how you can ask a resident or an informal carer about intimacy and stuff. But it's something I think they need more help with. And it's also a subject that is getting increasing attention in Dutch nursing homes. Yeah.
So I want to have a focus on the pandemic and specifically human rights for both of you to hear your thoughts on. Caroline, have you done research in care homes during the pandemic, or generally what have been your perceptions of witnessing, especially in the media storm, how human rights seem to have been severely impacted in care homes during the pandemic?
Yeah, so just to answer your question, during the heights of the pandemic, I didn't directly do research in care homes. I'm now doing research in care homes looking back at that time, but I did follow, you know, the public rhetoric and discussions, and it was really, I find, an unprecedented acknowledgement of the human rights situation of people living in care homes, something we had not seen like that before. And of course, human rights language, including the media, was used very much as a reactive tool to highlight what is going wrong. And I think that, you know, we're now at a point of time where we must use that, really, that, you know, acknowledgement, that more of an awareness to build on it and to really identify, well, where do these human rights violations, where did they come from? Where are the foundations for it? The health inequalities we saw during the pandemic, how did they come about? Yeah, there are deep roots for this. So I think we're currently at a time where we really need to use this awareness and build on it through interdisciplinary research, collaborations with care homes and so on. And I'm sometimes a bit worried that the situation is gonna, that awareness will go back again and is sort of forgotten again. But yeah, so now I'm working on looking back and trying to build on that.
That's interesting that you say that potentially this whole buzz that is going on and the increased levels of awareness, they might just fizzle out, because that was raised yesterday at the Alzheimer's Society conference as well, from unpaid carers, from people living with dementia as well, who really had that voice on stage, which was fascinating and really important to say, well, it's been over 2 years, there's this momentum now, so can we please have a really substantial change? Because otherwise we'll lose that. How about in the Netherlands, Debbie? I know that, was it in May 2020, you've had the national guidance to allow safe care and visiting. How have been your perceptions of human rights and care homes during the pandemic?
Indeed. In March 2020, I think the government decided to close all the care homes to visitors. And at first people were, I think everybody thought this is a good decision. But then within a few weeks, it appeared that many residents became unhappy, their relatives became unhappy, and discussions started about safety versus well-being. And the focus was very much on safety, and I think it was a bit medically oriented in that way. So when you also looked at crisis teams that care homes had, there were no psychologists in those teams. There were teams. There were no residents or informal caregivers in those teams. So it was all about containing the virus and keeping everybody as safe as possible. But then this changed, and what you mentioned is a guideline which was made by several professional organizations who worked together, which I think was very good initiative to have guidelines on how to reopen again. And I think that was well done. It was piloted in 25 homes, and we monitored those reopening, and we saw, for instance, that compliance to the regulations were some difficulties with that and some other issues. So we could advise on how to keep things as optimal as possible. But the discussion on the human rights issue, so the safety versus the well-being, is still there. And I think many people let's go back to normal life, just build a normal way of living. But the pandemic is actually still there, and there's still people getting infected, and there are also still homes who close down wards. And I think they usually mostly really try to keep this to a minimum, but some still think they need to, while others think it's not necessary. So I think we should discuss more what those arguments are for doing the one, making the one decision or the other. And I think there's also an increasing discussion on, for instance, which was very surprising to me, that they thought, a lot of homes talked about reinstating visiting hours. Well, in the last 10 years, this is really vanished in Dutch nursing homes. It's more about people live here and this is their life, and they also get care, but it's about their life. And then there seems to be something backwards in it. So this is what we're planning to study in an oncoming study on. What do you do with the lessons you learned during COVID, and how do you apply these in your current care? Because sometimes it seems, for an outsider, that they don't apply those lessons learned. So I'm really interested in looking at how people, improve after such a pandemic.
Hopefully there'll be lots of learnings from this. I want to pick up on the visiting hours issue that you've just raised. That's really interesting that that's happening. So I remember when my great-grandparents were in a nursing home in Germany, there were no visiting hours. It was a few years ago as well. And having spoken to some of your Dutch collaborators and friends as well, who are doing a lot of research on this in Maastricht, also for this season, we talked about innovative types of long-term care as well, and how long-term care should really be perceived as a comfortable home, family-like environment in general, where you feel happy and have a good quality of life, and you get a bit of care, the care that you need. And I like the way you phrased that as well. So it seems really the opposite direction of suddenly instating visiting hours, almost like in a hospital, for example.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of the issues have to do with people living in a group. And I think it's a very difficult care issue, how to provide individualized care to people who live in a group with different care needs. And this is a way to address that. So for some, it's bad to have many people in the living room. For others, it isn't. So we make visiting hours, and people can relate to that in the way that they want. So I think people are always trying to address the group living issue. And I think that is a really large challenge for us in the coming years to address this, because we have, for instance, let's try to go to small scale living environments. That's also about this living in a group, and it's very difficult. And so we have wards for people with specific conditions, like dementia at a young onset, or Huntington's disease, or people with Parkinson's. But people with the same conditions do not necessarily have the same care needs. So there are also wards that are called sociotherapeutic living environments, which are more about what are the care needs that people have, and can we group people like this? So I think when we look at something as a visiting hour, that's for me, it's really not understandable in a way, because I think it's not good to reinstate those. But I, at another level, I do understand, because I understand it is so difficult to address this group issue. I hope I'm making myself clear.
Absolutely, you are. Okay. And absolutely. And maybe that's, I don't know whether that could be addressed in any kind of way. So for example, if we look at dementia, if someone receives the diagnosis, then people are recommended to really write down what they would like their future care to look like, to really set out those care plans. Is that maybe something that could be integrated in terms of also, would I like to live in a group setting in a care home or individual, etc.?
I think so. You don't know what people's wishes change during, so that's always a difficult issue. But I think it helps those around them to make decisions when someone is no longer able to do it for himself. So it can be very supportive. But I think care homes are commonly focused on what they have to offer, and that is the way to group people. And I also understand that, because then you can, for instance, educate your team on Huntington's disease, for instance, or very severe challenging behavior. I do understand that, but it's about the balance between specializing your nursing staff and your other staff, and what is best for residents.
So talking about pandemic more broadly as well, Caroline, in the UK, we've had, well, we are having Rights for Residents, a really strong and public-facing advocacy group who's trying to raise the support and the and engagement of human rights for care home residents and for their loved ones and family members. Have you had interactions with Rights for Residents?
Yes, yes, I have. So I work with them on several levels. So we are members together in something called the Social Care Innovators Group, which is really a group of, you know, people interested in working in social care coming together. And we're there, work together in a group called Power and Rights. And we've done some work on making the government guidance around visitors that changed throughout the pandemic to make that more accessible for people. So, you know, they understand where they are at around issues like the essential caregiver status, for example, which was a special status for every care home resident, was able to appoint one person who'd always be able to come into the care home theoretically without limitation, but that was very difficult to actually roll out in practice. So that's where we work together. And yeah, I think it's very, very important to, as a researcher, to engage with grassroots groups like that and with people living in care homes. So yeah.
Absolutely. And there will be on another episode as well. We've got two people from Rights for Residents, which I'm very intrigued to talk to them about more. They're very passionate, which is lovely as a researcher. So human rights more broadly, but also, I mean, we've got different countries represented here, which I find is always fantastic, especially in the care environment. Do you feel, both of you, that we might be able to learn something from different settings or different countries or different approaches and kind of implement them where we are or in different settings?
Yeah, I certainly think so. It's always good to have a reflection from different perspectives on what you're doing. And I think that would be very helpful also for instance, for nursing staff. But I do think it's important when you look at issues such as well-being that we take a universal perspective. So I don't think it's very wise to approach, for instance, quality of life or well-being from a very specific group point of view. So that's what you see happening, right? That this is a measurement instrument for quality of life in dementia, measurement instrument for quality of life in lung cancer, and all those specific addresses make you focus on the disease or the condition that people have. And it may make you blind to their strengths and to their what they have to offer and what their resources are for becoming well, for having well-being. So I would always, although I think so, various settings and various groups are enlightening for your own perspective, I always want to go back to the universal perspective of people are people and they have stuff. But they're like us, right? So for me, the universal perspective is always my starting point.
Very good point. Caroline?
Well, I would agree with that too. I would always think that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is our starting point when it comes to human rights, and really the acknowledgement that people living in care homes are equally entitled to all rights and freedoms within the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the follow-on conventions as anybody else. So those, you know, those include rights like the right to education. Why would we say it doesn't matter anymore when you live in a care home? So I think that is the starting point. But then I do think that there are countries and nations that we can be inspired by. I particularly find the Scottish example very inspiring, the way that the care sector goes about and talking about human rights, trying to integrate it, taking this very human relationship-centered approach and quite a laid-back approach in a way where it's not just about, you know, violations and about law and what have people done wrong and shaming and blaming, but where it's about, let's take that as the starting point to build a system that helps us all to, you know, provide care that is equal and dignified. And so that's a nation I would look at. But yeah, I completely agree with you, Debbie. I think a universal approach is a good starting point.
Makes sense, stepping back and really taking the overall perspective. So my last question for both of you is, if you could both change one thing about how care homes or nursing homes are operating and providing care, what would that be?
I think that it would be good to increase the allocated time for innovation, because it is not clear in my idea in Dutch nursing homes that the need to change is a constant. So people need to have and also need to feel space to change, to try new things. And if we do not provide that opportunity, we cannot address all the new knowledge that comes from research, the new innovations that are developed, and learn how to implement those and increase the well-being of the residents. So for me, I think this is a very important issue that I would like to see changed.
Good point. Time for innovation and that reflection, I think, as well, that seems to be lacking a lot, that mm-hmm. time, at least in UK care homes, in quite a few. So what about you, Caroline?
I would like to see care homes more as part of community. That means I would really like to see all care homes, and I have seen several care homes do that, open up their doors more, to not be closed institutions, but really make an effort to invite people in and to make care homes part of the community. Because quite often I feel like I walk past a care home, it's a place that I cannot go into. You know, the doors are literally shut. There are gatekeepers there. I cannot talk to the people behind those closed doors. And I think it would be really, really valuable and very important for everybody in society to bring care homes in.
Absolutely. It would raise the social engagement element as well, wouldn't it? Maybe something more public facing. And it really does seem, at least over here in the care homes that I have seen, and many of them, it is more like an institution. And I hate the term institution. We can't say people get institutionalized. We really know they enter a care home, for example, and it's all the terminology as well. And there are things that can be done so easily. And it's been on documentaries as well, like intergenerational activities, getting kindergartens or schools more involved. But I like that idea, Caroline, that it should be much more open facing. And also it might help in understanding age or frailty is not something to be ashamed of. So I think that's all we've got time for now. So thank you so much, Debbie, joining us from the Netherlands. Thank you, Caroline. Fantastic talking to both of you. And if you want to find out more about Caroline's or Debbie's research, take a look at the bio. And for more discussions about care homes, tune into the next few episodes of this season. Thank you, everyone.